shortly after 8 p.m., hundreds, maybe thousands of Arizonans reported seeing a triangular-shaped object with three to
thousands of people saw more than stars in the night sky.
The mystery remains unsolved and controversial.
There was nothing there but blackness and these three amber orbs. The top orb started to dim as if on a dimmer switch. It didn't budge at all.
The people who saw the lights will say the lights were orange. They were bright and they were big and they were like nothing they've ever seen before. And there's been no official explanation.
This didn't look like anything I'd ever seen in my life.
Hello, everyone. This is Jerry Pippin, and that was the soundtrack of The Phoenix Lights, a great documentary by Dr. Lynn Kitai, an award-winning documentary for sure. And we have Dr. Kitai on the phone, and we'll be talking to her about the 10th anniversary today, March 17th. Well, Dr. Lynn, it's hard to believe it's been 10 years. How are you?
Absolutely. I'm doing great, and thanks for having me on.
Let's talk. We're going to talk about a lot of things. You're doing all kinds of media events here on the 10th anniversary, including on Sunday night. You got a little shot here on somebody who's pretty well known.
I think it's a first. Apology on the Geraldo Rivera Geraldo at large. Actually, I'm going to be whisked away on Sunday. We're actually screening our internationally award-winning documentary, The Phoenix Lights. Not alone. At the Harkin Shea Theater, the last couple years have been sold out houses for all three shows. And we're so proud. I mean, it's amazing that we've accomplished what we've accomplished in such a short time, and especially with this genre, to have won over a dozen international film festival awards. But I'll be whisked away after the second show to a satellite feed, so it's a live feed for the Geraldo show.
Well, you're an old hand at media, so you can handle all that.
Well, you know, it's really interesting, and it's very ironic to be sure that for the last 30 years I have dedicated my life's work to community education, and particularly for children in schools, curriculum being distributed by Discovery Education and all that good stuff, but and health reporting for NBC and USA Cable, which kind of prepared me for this. I you know, my son, my younger son, who's a neurology resident, was the only person who read my 750-page journal after I pushed my entire professional life aside for 4 years to find a logical source and meaning for what we had witnessed and photographed, as both up close and personal, very close sighting in 95. My husband, who's also a physician, I had no interest or knowledge in this at all, and witnessed three amber orbs, actually a little below us, who live high on a mountain, Tuckton Mountain, range with a panoramic view of the city skyline. So we know what pops up out there, be it planes or helicopters or streetlights or car lights or flares. We're quite familiar with all those things, and this was very, very different and very close to our home. And then 2 years later, after I had gotten pictures, didn't know what the heck this advanced technology was doing above a private gated area, the lights came back again 2 months before the mass sighting, which I happened to catch the same phenomena in the same location. This is really important data. I mean, it's either been dismissed or ignored for since I came forward 3 years ago by some. But the point is that I have pictures that prove I have caught this thing head-on turning into a V-shape, and was so unnerving. It was a gigantic formation over a mile wide. You could see, and it was so unnerving that the next morning I called around to see if anyone had seen it and could give me an explanation, and found air traffic controllers at Sky Harbor International Airport, saw the same thing, did not show up on radar, was in restricted airspace in front of the mountain range over Phoenix, and in their own words, when they took a look with binoculars, there were six points of light, massive span, over a mile wide, equidistant from each other, that was moving slowly in tandem behind South Mountain. And when I asked them what it was, it beats me. And, you know, I said, well, you're air traffic controllers, if you didn't know what it was. And we kept in contact, and I continued taking pictures up until including March 13th, when a mile to 2 mile wide formation of these lights, V-shaped formation, and different people actually saw different things. So we're not sure if it was a parade throughout the state of many different objects, because some people saw a boomerang shape, some people saw a crab, some people saw these lights that seemed to be attached to something. Many people had it go right over their heads. I mean, this thing traversed the entire state of Arizona. This is really important to note. And glided at very low altitude, about 30 miles an hour. Some people did see it take off at a tremendous speed. Fantastic technology, to be sure, and totally silent. And this was for many, many hours, Jerry. We have reports, now that I've been out there, I've received thousands of emails already, that and certainly from number of people, there were reports as early as 5 p.m. and as late as 2 a.m. The bulk of the witness reporting to the news and so forth came in a little later, about 8 o'clock, between 8 and 11 o'clock, because that's when many people were outside looking up purposely at the sky to catch a glimpse of the Hale-Bopp comet. And this thing traversed the most populated corridor of Arizona, where the parade came through. The most populated corridor of Arizona. So whoever did this wanted to be seen. And what's really really important to note is not only did I capture the same formation again in the same location, by the time I got out there with my video cameras, three had disappeared, and there was three left, like a giant point, the end points of a giant triangle over the city. And I spoke with the air traffic controllers again the morning after the mass sighting, and they said to them it was the same thing in the same spot. Again, it did not show up on radar. It was in restricted airspace. So it's established with my data, the data speaks for itself, that these phenomena not only appeared in Phoenix, but also that I had documentation 2 months before the mass sighting and photographic documentation 2 years before the mass sighting, because we went back to those pictures from 95 that I took. We then noticed that the same formation was in the same location again. And we're talking 2 months and 2 years before the supposed flare dropped by the Maryland Air National Guard. They were only in town March 1st to the 15th. And I have no doubt that flares might have been sent out to divert attention away from the two unknowns, but that's not what we saw. And certainly not what went throughout the entire state of Arizona. So there's much more to the story than just March 13th, but just to be able to commemorate the 10th anniversary of what's now an historic sighting worldwide is such a thrill and an honor to be involved, because I did not want to come forward and stayed anonymous, as you know, for 7 years after I pushed my entire professional life aside for four to find a logical source of meaning for what I had witnessed and photographed, and have yet to find it. If anything, it opened up an entire new world to me, that because my work has been community education for 30 years on the reality of vital health issues, I felt obliged to share the reality of this vital issue as well.
Well, now, Dr. Lynn, you know, it's been 10 years, and I keep reading sightings reports from Phoenix. Things are still happening around there.
They are, but you have to be careful, and that was one of the reasons that I came forward, because, you know, there was no explanation, there was no investigation for 5 months. I mean, that we were being told when thousands of witnesses saw this thing and asked, you know, why isn't there an investigation? Something happened on March 13th. Oh, all planes were grounded by 8:30. Well, this went on for 5 months. And suddenly a USA Today article came out on June 18th, 97, that opened it up to international scrutiny. We were deluged by media from all over the world. And once they started talking to the witnesses, and this is very important to note too, because witness testimony, even though those things can be explained, there's a small percentage of things that cannot, and certainly what happened throughout the state on March 13, 1997, fits into that category. You know, they too. I mean, the witness reports were so detailed and so heartfelt. They were pounding the government and military for some kind of investigation, some kind of explanation. And then a month after that, suddenly they came up with the flare theory. And again, I don't doubt that there were flares sent off. We know that jets were sent out after this object that was hovering right over 7th Avenue and Indian School in the middle of Phoenix, about 8:20 or so. We have a crewman's tape report at the UFO Reporting Center with Peter Davenport that jets were sent out, and we also have witnesses that saw the jets being sent out on full blast. And as they got closer to the object, the object just blinked out. And his crewman goes on to say that he was one of the people to help one of the pilots out of his own aircraft because he was so shaken up by it. So the military was well aware that something was going on, and I've been told and that Operation Snowbird that they profess to be doing, if you really look into the meaning of that, it means diversionary tactical maneuver for UFO sightings. So if that is true, then I have no doubt that flares were sent off here and there, but that's not what we saw. And the data speaks for itself. Again, this isn't about me. It's about the data, and I got my own data out there without coming forward for 7 years, but it became clear that if I didn't step forward as someone of credence to say it's okay to talk about this and get this out in the open, it would have probably sat on a shelf. So here I am.
Well, we're going to get into some more of that detail in a minute. We mentioned the fact that you're making lots of appearances in Phoenix this whole month, and I think down toward the end of the month, March 28th, you have something going on, don't you, with Phoenix Lights and a book signing?
Yes, thank you for mentioning that. My main purpose here is to educate, and it's a choice whether you want to pick up the book or look at the documentary. But for the 10th anniversary, we certainly wanted to schedule some fun events to raise awareness and to educate the public. Last night, in fact, we opened an exhibit. The Anthropology Department actually requested that we join them in opening up an exhibit called Alien Photographs, and really looking at the photographs featuring the Phoenix Lights, and Wendell Stevens was kind enough to donate many pictures as well from many years past of unexplained aerial phenomena, and it was such a thrill. I mean, coming from an education background, particularly for youth, I mean, my programs are from K on through college, distributed by Discovery Education, and it's very dear to my heart to be able to really have a crowd there from the university, from Arizona State University, appreciate that there is something going on, and learning about it and opening their minds and their hearts to the possibility was such a thrill. And I'm also going to be presenting there. I have a presentation that I got together, a new PowerPoint presentation. It's pretty mind-boggling. I have an incredible collection of photographs, and in good conscience, I couldn't stick it in a drawer. I mean, that was a lot of soul-searching went on to come forward. But when you have this kind of data that speaks for itself and should be shared, how can you not? And so I've gotten a PowerPoint presentation together that actually shows the one picture that prompted me to come forward that I've never shared before.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it's called Coincidence or Communication, because too many things happened after the mass sighting that were just too serendipitous. Actually, even before, 6 months before the mass sighting, this is an interesting aside, I was asked to present my substance abuse prevention education program to the Gila Bend Indian Reservation School. They have one school there. And that happens to be situated in the basin between South Mountain and the Estrella Mountain Range. Well, Estrella means star in Spanish. That right away tells you that, how is that named? Star, okay, Estrella Mountain. And I didn't come to learn until after the mass sighting. I went back to them, and the door was open. They usually don't talk to the general public. And I asked, did anybody see the Phoenix Lights? And they started to laugh, and I said, is that funny? And they said, are you kidding? We've been looking up at them for centuries. We call them light beings, sky people. They believe that they're part of their ancestry. It's part of their culture. I had no idea. I had no interest or knowledge in this topic at all. And it wasn't until after the mass sighting, a week after, that I learned that this was happening worldwide. I mean, here was Jim Villatoso, who I had no idea who he was until he was on the news, not only showing my footage, because again, I got my photographic data out there, but remained anonymous, and showing other amber orbs in triangle formation from all over the world. This is the first I heard of it. This is a week after the mass sighting. And that really took me back, because here now thousands of people have seen what I have been seeing and photographing, and certainly were concerned, alarmed, excited. I mean, it really touched people at a very, very deep level. We can get into that conversation, but because that really impressed me, and was one of the other reasons I came forward. But on the other side, I had no idea that other countries like Belgium, they had sightings in the early 90s, and they came to the United States and said, "Are you doing this?" And the United States flatly denied that we were. China has an elite group of scientists studying these phenomena. Japan built a museum. The government funded a museum to promote universal peace. That's a wonderful, beautiful message. And other countries as well. I mean, this has been happening worldwide for many years. So when you look at other countries and cultures right here that are open to these phenomena as being unearthly, and I've never said what they are, only that they are, and it's time we get them out, get this topic out in the open, and address it, and accept it, and study it, and move forward in our own evolution. And I think that's where we're going now. Just like when people thought there was a flat world, and it took time before people it sunk in that we have a round world, and it took 17 centuries for human beings to realize, with the advent of the microscope, that there are zillions of tiny microorganisms all around us, even in our bodies. And just recently we learned that there's electromagnetic energy around every living cell that helped us develop the MRI, the magnetic resonance imaging machine. Well, just because we can't see these tiny living entities or electromagnetic energies or gamma rays or radio waves, whatever, doesn't mean they're not real. We might just be looking on the AM dial for an FM frequency.
We will be right back, and I want to find out, obviously, your opinions have changed in 10 years, and we want to follow up just what you were talking about, so don't go away. We want to remind everybody that Phoenix Lights presentation will be at the Paradise Valley Community College Center for the Performing Arts. I think it's on 32nd Street, way out there, 18401 North 32nd in Phoenix. And the general admission for students is only $5.
Mm-hmm. So, at ASU on April the 11th. And this weekend, actually, we have a showing at the Barnes & Noble is sponsoring my presentation at the Mustang Library, which is near 90th Street and Via Linda. They're in the Phoenix area. And on Sunday, we'll be having three screenings of the new version of the documentary. It's been a work in progress, and we've revamped it quite a bit. We've added children. We have new sightings, new pictures that I'm sharing, because I do have some daytime pictures as well, which we can get into.
Well, good. We'll be right back to talk about some of that. And in addition to that, you know, I'm going to follow up the fact that this is nothing new to the Phoenix area. There have been history of Native Americans talking about these strange lights and those all kinds of drawings and things on mountain cliffs, on South Mountain for sure.
Oh, yeah, petroglyphs. And if anybody wants to take a look at some of the pictures that I've gathered, and also there's a wonderful Fox and MSNBC report on www.thephoenixlights.net, thephoenixlights.net. It's fascinating.
And they need to... if they haven't seen your DVD, we have it for sale, and we have details about that coming up, too. Don't go away.
The year was 1970 when Jack Blanchard and Misty Morgan released their first big single hit, Tennessee Birdwalk. For the first time in the history of music, this 45 RPM single becomes available to the public in the form of a mouse pad. Made of high-quality quarter-inch rubber, this fabric-covered 8-inch mouse pad delivers your mouse a very smooth ride. For only $9.95 plus $2.50 shipping and handling, your mouse pad will be rushed via USPS first-class mail. Simply click on the happy little mice and be directed to our ordering page. Hurry while this limited time offer lasts.
That's Tennessee Birdwalk.
Dr. Lynn, it's been a decade, and what's going on? Have you come to a conclusion yet about the Phoenix Lights?
You know, I've never said what they are, only that they are, and certainly you can speculate, but it seems reasonable only because my close sighting in 95 was just so, miraculous and extraordinary. I mean, it really was kind of technology that I never knew existed on Earth. So it wasn't until after the mass sighting that I realized this was happening worldwide for many, many years. In fact, we just had a witness forum at the Glendale City Hall last weekend, and a gentleman, 85-year-old gentleman, your young gentleman, from France, actually shared with the audience that he was a pilot in World War II, and these Foo Fighters, these amber orbs, the identical phenomena, were flying around their planes, and they thought that, you know, somebody had some spy technology, as did every other country, thought every other country had some kind of spy technology. And it wasn't until after the war that each side realized that nobody had this kind of spy technology. So they've been around a really long time, and the fact that we had this event that happened throughout the state, and seen by thousands of people that were purposely looking up at the sky at the Hale-Bopp comet. The bottom line is whoever did this wanted to be seen. And, and still today, I mean, we're not sure what it was or if it was a parade, but certainly it really woke people up that were open to it.
You know, one of the things I find interesting about it is the government's reaction, the Air Force's reaction,
the non-reaction.
Yeah, well, they kind of put a flare display on right away.
They didn't do it right away. Actually, when they came out with their announcement, and I have to share a personal conversation. I had called every military base here. I was really searching out a logical explanation for this, and I started out as a healthy skeptic. One must be open when you're in the medical profession to anything that walks through the door, non-judgmental. So I was open enough to say, hey, you know, show me what this is. But consistently, they were more curious about the pictures that I took than giving an explanation for it. And then I get a call a month after the USA Today article came out from the head of the head BR person at the Air National Guard, and she said to me, Dr. Lynn, I think we know what those lights were back in March. And I was excited. I was ready to hear. What was it? And she said, well, do you believe that for 5 months nobody looked at the log for visiting Air National Guard, and the Maryland Air National Guard was in town sending off flares, so that must be what some people saw. This is what she said to me. And I said, well, wait a minute. And she didn't know what I had, just that I had taken pictures. I said, well, were they in town 2 months before the mass sighting? And she said, no, they came in, you know, March 1st to the 15th. I said, well, I have pictures that show, that prove that whoever did this twice. I have the same formation in the same location. It was of this mile-wide formation of orbs, and it was confirmed the next morning by air traffic controllers who saw it, too, in restricted airspace. She said, you never told me that. And I said, besides that, and I had educated myself to flares, and I've gone on television several times to educate the Phoenix community, because it's important to know the difference between flares that drop and that drift with the wind, and that can't possibly keep a rock-solid formation like these phenomena were doing, and smoke trails and so forth. And besides the fact that a group of flares could never, ever travel the entire state over many hours. So when you really, we see flares being dropped periodically. In fact, a few weeks ago, there were flare drops at very high altitude. Why was that? And it certainly, confuses people that don't have a trained eye. Was that the purpose? I don't know, but it was, you know, a month before the 10th anniversary, and it was just interesting and coincidental, if once again, that was happening. So, I'm thrilled that people are embracing not only the book, but also the documentary and coming to the presentation so that they can learn.
When we talk about the recent sightings, I guess they're very similar to what happened back in 97 and 95.
Well, first of all, the recent sightings of the Phoenix lights, the most recent for me was August 30th. But let me get back to the military, because after they came out with their announcement that it was flares, it was like, okay, if you did it, and obviously I have pictures that show that whoever did it twice before the mass sighting in the same location, do it again. Reenact it. Whoever did this obviously did it more than once, so do it again. Well, it wasn't only myself. It was a number of people were screaming for this, including Councilwoman Vice Mayor of Phoenix, Councilwoman Frances Emma Barwood, who was the only person in government who innocently, she didn't say anything, but she innocently, because she had so many of her constituents calling her, and we're talking over 1,000, calling, asking, why isn't there an investigation, why isn't there an explanation, and innocently, in a council meeting, she brought it up, and she said, you know, I've gotten a lot of calls, I have news people asking me, you know, what's going on here, maybe we should look into it, and she was plastered to the wall. I have to tell you, just criticized and ostracized, jokes made of her in the newspaper. It was not a pretty picture, what happened to people that came forward. I was very content being anonymous and just collecting my own data, which I did meticulously, by the way, Jerry. I went down to the University of Arizona Optical Science Department, Consciousness Study Department, ASU Geology, Anthropology, Mathematics Department, Brooks Institute of Photography, asking them, please tell me what this is. Let's find out what this is. And across the board, not only don't we have the technology to definitively define what it is, we do have technology to rule out what it isn't. And when it came down to it, it's an unknown. I mean, it's just an unknown. At any rate, months passed and years passed. It wasn't until right before the third anniversary in 2000 of the mass sighting, on March 7th, was there a big announcement that 3 Air National Guards were coming into town. It was New York and Michigan and California, I believe, to show everybody the Phoenix lights. Well, we were game. I mean, everybody was out there, media included, and witnesses with their cameras on ready. And I had heard that it was supposed to be a 2-week run. Well, by the second day, it was such a laughing stock. I mean, it was just so significantly different. You know, flares drift. They have smoke trails. They couldn't keep a formation. It has never been reenacted in 10 years. So that's saying something.
Yeah, Larry Dick and my executive producer and I have discussed that. For no other reason, why wouldn't they duplicate it if they could?
Right, exactly. And they tried. That was their shot. I mean, they announced it. It was headlines in the paper and on the radio that they were doing this. And everybody was ready for them. And it really, you know, they made a valiant effort, I guess, but certainly for the witnesses and the media. I mean, you could just tell immediately they tried to make a triangle. It was upside down. It fell apart right away. And if you get on my website, thephoenixlights.net, take a look at that in the MSNBC report. The data speaks for itself, and that's why I'm here, Jerry, just to say, you know, hey, the data was collected. I had a 750-page journal 4 years later and had to decide what I was going to do with all that data. And we're talking the history of these things. They mentioned Sioux fighters, but it goes way beyond that. I mean, way beyond World War II. I mean, we have documentation from the time human documentation started. I mean, we had drawings in primitive caves in Pakistan of what we would call UFOs today. Where did they get that idea? Unless they had seen something and drew what they saw, as well as 17th and 18th century paintings and the Bible, certainly. There's many examples. But so, you know, when you really look at the whole picture, not only is it fascinating, but you know, you see that this has been around for a long, long time, and our culture, has really disregarded and even ostracized talking about this. So, you know, if I can be a credible voice out there, like I said, I did not want to come forward. But, you know, it gets to the point that you have to decide what to do with what you have. And in good conscience, as an educator for 30 years, it was just too important not to share.
We, you know, talking about the Air Force and the government and their reactions, I'm not sure if they know much more than we do.
Well, you know what? God bless them. They have a job to do. And I really don't get involved with bashing or conspiracy things, whatever. I mean, that's, you know, it just is not productive. What's productive is actually getting the data that we do know out there. People can decide for themselves. And it speaks for itself. To date, I mean, I've had no one give me an explanation for what these things are.
We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. Don't forget, we're going to tell you how to get the documentary and the book, too, as well. Are you doing anything new, or are you still...
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, the documentary that you have, Jerry, is the original, now collector's item. We only made a certain amount because this has been a work in progress for the last couple of years. We finished the documentary in October with new sightings. We've put children in it. It's a little bit different than the original. In fact, there's even more. It's longer. The original is a little longer. We revamped it. But certainly the foundation of it is there. So the DVD that you have available on your site is really the original collector's item. And as long as they last, they'll be available. The ones that we're screening for only screening, and we are looking for a distributor. And, you know, hopefully we'll be able to get the new one out there as well. But I don't know when. So, you know, for now, that's what's available, and people have really been embracing it and enjoy it and learning from it, and that's a good thing.
We'll be right back, folks. Don't go away.
Do you have a problem with mold or mildew in your home? Well, listen to this. We have found a product you will love. Moldzyme, an effective non-toxic mold and mildew cleaner. Moldzyme is the cleaner, greener way to remove mold and mildew stains. This is a line of completely non-hazardous, non-toxic, and environmentally safe products that gets rid of mold and mildew stains quickly, easily, and safely. Moldzyme contains no chlorine or ammonia, is non-hazardous and hypoallergenic, safe on wood, concrete, and brick, inside or outside your home. Moldzyme eliminates odors and is fragrance-free, an all-natural and environmentally safe way to remove mold and mildew stains that really work. See the complete line of products by clicking on one of the Moldzyme banners located throughout our website. You'll be glad you did.